Hey, hi, hello.
I'm Gianna,
And I'm Marie.
and welcome to Cereal from the Box, a podcast about eating well, recovery, life after ED, and beyond.
Woo.
So, Marie, how's your week been?
It has been pretty good. Bit on the busy side. Obviously have school. I started my field placement this week, like my first full week. So that's like 24 hours a week. So 3 days of my week were taken up by that and doing training. So that's kind of exciting. And then also I decided to start taking riding lessons again. So I did had my
Oh,
first lesson this week.
yay! I'm so happy. What's your field placement?
So it's basically doing short-term therapeutic services and case management services that help people in crisis.
Oh, that's good. That's a very good job for you.
Yeah, super exciting. How about you? How was your week?
Good. So, my week was fine. I had a lot of car troubles
No.
this week, per usual. I really do need a new car. If anyone is selling a nice used car, please contact me. But other than that, I spent a Rosh Hashanah with my boyfriend's family. It was very unique. It was a very religious Rosh Hashanah, which like I've been before, but like with like a more, relaxed environment. And it was fun, I learned a lot. There was a shofar blown at his house, which is like those like horns, like
Oh.
brrr. It was very cool. Like some guy came to their house and did it.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it was a cultural
Yeah,
experience,
that's super
to say the least.
cool.
And then we had a sushi date, which was fun. It was like sushi from the supermarket.
Amazing.
Delicious. But yeah, that's been my week.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so this episode, we wanted to talk more about basically, if you're at the point where you're now choosing recovery and you want to start that journey, what are the options for you? Because we've had very different experiences, right? So, like I've mentioned before, I was at a treatment facility. So that's kind of where I got my start, whereas Gianna, you chose on your own to recover and have been doing that more or less independently.
Yeah, for sure.
So we were just thinking that, because we have two different perspectives, we can kind of go through each of those and what you can kind of expect, what you need to know, maybe some of the pros and cons of each of those. And then we also kind of have some other options that possibly could work for you and things that we can kind of discuss just to give you a more well-rounded idea of like what your recovery journey could look like. But it definitely doesn't have to look like this by any means. And also,
Of course.
I know like a lot of people probably listening have already started their recovery journeys. So we would love to be able to hear your feedback and hopefully this is relatable for you, even if it's not necessarily helping you kind of decide where you need to be.
Yeah, like if we miss something and you want to share it, remember you can always DM us at Cereal from the Box on Instagram or send us an email. Yeah, for sure. So, Marie, do you want to like talk about like you went to like treatment? So, do you want to kind of like talk about what that was like just what it's like to be in a facility?
Yeah, I guess maybe it would be helpful to kind of start by speaking to like what treatment even means, or like what I mean by when I say that. And essentially, treatment or being in a treatment facility or center is anywhere that specializes in eating disorders and helping people recover. And there's, essentially like different levels of care that you can be in. So kind of to go through that briefly, levels of care really means just like how much support do you need in order to start your recovery journey. I mean, and a lot of people that have been to treatment centers can definitely attest to this, there's a lot of like kind of competition around what level of care you're in. And this idea that like being in a higher level of care validates how sick you are, which for a number of reasons is really like a sort of messed up way to go about
it.
Yeah,
it sounds pretty fucked up.
And I mean, like, not any judgment towards anyone that feels that way, because it's definitely just like a thing that eating disorders make you think and care about. But really, it just means level of support. And if you need more support, you can always go up a level of care. And if you feel like you don't need as much support, you can always start going down a level of care. But essentially, the highest level of care is residential versus inpatient. So they're at the same, to my understanding, they're at the same level. But inpatient has more of the equipment, I guess, or they're better equipped to provide like medical services. So people that are medically unstable, they're going to be probably placed in an inpatient treatment, or they might have to be in an inpatient treatment. But different treatment facilities might call their highest level of care either inpatient versus residential. So like the first treatment facility that I went to, they only had an inpatient program. They didn't have a residential program.
Okay.
And that's because they were kind of connected to a hospital and other things like that. But then the second treatment facility that I went to, their highest level of care was only a residential program. And essentially, like at this level, you're going to be living on the unit or in the house or whatever kind of facility they have. And you're there 24/7 to receive 24/7 support. Then the level down of that is partial hospitalization. That's can also be referred to as PHP or like day programs. So in those cases, like the schedule can kind of vary for how many meals you're there, or how many hours a day you're there, or how many days a week you're there. But essentially, you're going to not be spending the evenings on the unit anymore. But there's still a lot more support for meals and stuff like that.
Okay.
Then the step down after that is intensive outpatient, which is an IOP program. So that one, for instance, I think in both of the facilities that I went to, it was like a couple group therapies and things like that. And then you would have dinner as your meal together. And the support you would receive would be during dinner. And then the rest of the day, you're expected to be compliant, more or less, with the...
I feel like dinner was always like the hardest one. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, I think it really depends like person to person. I think the reason why they kind of do dinner is because it makes it a lot more accessible to people. I mean, because you have adults who need to be having more support, so they can't do necessarily, or it'd be more difficult for them to be doing lunch in the middle of the day instead of like dinner. And then it just kind of also helps because like you can definitely process some of what happened earlier in the day, and people and, you know, the staff there can check in what happened earlier in the day in terms of meals or just other things going on. And that can be processed during the groups and nutrition and things like that. And then you have support around dinner. So that's kind of the gist of that. And then the next like kind of step down after that is outpatient. So when I say treatment, I kind of lump all of these together.
Because it's all treatment.
Yeah. But outpatient, you're not associated with a treatment facility anymore. Outpatient just means that you have a therapist, maybe like a nutritionist, something along those lines, some kind of support system of professionals, a team that helps you through your recovery process while you're still going about living your life in the normal day-to-day routines that you have. So that's kind of the structure. When it comes to treatment, is there any?
So like, what do you think was like the best part about being in like a formal treatment?
I think the number one like pro, and I think at the time it might be, depending on, you know, your experience of it, it might be hard to like appreciate it, but the accountability.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because depending on, even with the differing levels of support, when you're there, there's always an accountability piece. So if you're having meals there, they have a structure for you in terms of like how much you should be eating, what you should be eating, in order to ensure that you're not enacting on behaviors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with that, it's like really helpful because no matter what kind of behaviors you have and you're experiencing, they have like the accountability in place through your team, through peer support, and things like that to ensure that you're keeping on track mm-hmm. with that and you're not lapsing. I don't want to say relapsing,
mm-hmm.
But lapsing into behavior use.
Okay.
So it does really kind of, especially if you start at the residential or inpatient level, it really does kind of make you kind of have to do a 180 mm-hmm. in a way, right?
Yeah.
From starting with like, you know, probably using behaviors before you're going into treatment to when you're in treatment, behaviors are no longer tolerated. Like you can't exercise at most treatment facilities. And they'll monitor based off of like, you know, how medically you're doing,
mm-hmm.
How much movement you can be participating in. You know, they're making sure that you complete all of your meals. So that's counteracting the restriction. They monitor your bathroom usage in order to also monitor restriction, purging, mm-hmm. things like that. And then, you know, you have all of your meals and snacks through them. So that can also help with the binging behaviors as well.
Yeah.
So that's definitely like the main piece. And I feel like when I went in to treatment, I feel like if I had decided not to go into treatment, but decided mm-hmm. to like recover on my own or not have that support, I don't think I would have had the accountability that I needed. Like I wouldn't have been able to keep myself accountable. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, definitely. That's like something that sounds really good, like really good about it. So like you also wrote on our chart, something about refeeding syndrome. Can you explain what that is? Like, I just don't know what that is.
Yeah. So essentially if you're especially coming from a restrictive background, right?
Yeah.
When you start to adequately nourish your body again, that can kind of lead to a couple different things happening on a more like physiological level, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the potential risk when you start eating to an adequate level again, that if you do that process too quickly, depending on what your history is,
mm-hmm.
That it can kind of throw your physiological things out of whack. So I guess to kind of like give an example, I mean, the idea of it is that, you know, if your electrolytes are out of balance and things like that, it can have kind of negative repercussions.
So it's like it's more of a physical than an emotional syndrome.
Yeah. So it's more something that can happen physically. Let me see if I can find actually a good definition. But yeah, the risk basically is that if you are not being medically monitored, that could kind of have negative effects on your, you know, your medical and your physical health.
Right.
So I just pulled up like Wikipedia. So it says refeeding syndrome is a metabolic disturbance that occurs as a result of reinstitution of nutrition and people and animals who are starved or severely malnourished or metabolically stressed because of severe illness. When too much food or liquid nutrition supplement is eaten during the initial 4 to 7 days following a malnutrition event, it can cause low concentrations of potassium, magnesium, and phosphorus. Those are all electrolytes, like I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it can result in cardiac, pulmonary, and neurological symptoms. And there is the potential that it could be fatal. So I actually like haven't heard of this being necessarily a problem for anyone who's decided to recover by themselves, but it definitely for me, I see it as like a potential risk because I know that I had low phosphorus levels while I was in treatment, and like that was able to be easily, you know, remedied or whatever and monitored. And yeah, through treatment. So I feel like it's definitely like even important that if you decide to recover on your own, I definitely wouldn't be like afraid of that process happening, or consider that, you know, to be something that's guaranteed to happen. Yeah. But I definitely think it's helpful to consult a primary care physician or a nutritionist in order to, like, you know, just be mindful of that process and how you can start to physically feel when you decide to recover, because that can also just be really hard mentally. Mm-hmm. You know, to have a lot of physical symptoms, especially because, mm-hmm. like, a lot of us have had physical symptoms while in our eating disorders, like being cold all the time, being really tired, maybe feeling dizzy, things like that. So it can be kind of discouraging when you have equally worse symptoms upon starting to mm-hmm. enter the quote-unquote refeeding process or whatever. So that can be kind of difficult to work through.
What do you feel like when you were like, okay, I'm like, I have a problem, what made you decide to go to a like treatment center mm-hmm. facility?
So it was less my choice and more just how the process of events happened.
Okay.
So essentially, like, my original motivation factor was kind of like, and I feel like you hear this a lot, being sick and tired of being sick and tired. Mm-hmm. So that process just got very overwhelming at one point. So I disclosed to my roommate, who mm-hmm. also had an eating disorder in high school, that...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that things weren't great, and I was kind of tired of this, and I think I need to talk to somebody. Is kind mm-hmm. of what I had come to. So I had made an appointment with the local counseling center on campus. And then they said to me, you have an eating disorder. And I said, what? are you sure? Okay. And then they essentially told my parents and then were like, you can go to this treatment facility. What's like your insurance kind of thing?
Okay.
And I had to like call them or whatever. And then
that's your biggest fear.
Like a week later. Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sure one of my parents called them or something. I did not directly talk to them. But yeah, so I was basically like, it was a very quick turnaround in terms mm-hmm. of like going into treatment. So I didn't have any options really presented to me. It was okay. Just like, you can go to treatment. So it was kind of a bit of an overwhelming process in that sense, is like I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't know mm-hmm. what treatment was supposed to look like. I just knew that obviously they were going to make me gain weight and make me eat.
Yeah.
Which is also like, I wasn't quite to terms with that at the point when I decided that I was done with being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that didn't really help my recovery process.
Yeah.
I mean, in the long run, it's fine, and I wouldn't change how that has gone. But I think coming from a place of more just like, I'm no longer in denial, but like slightly thinking maybe there's something is a problem,
mm-hmm.
probably like wasn't enough to get me to fully accept this like 180 that I was going to have to be doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because like, I went to visit you one time and I was like,
yeah,
I was like, if this was me, I would be so scared, like have to come live by myself. And like, so yeah. I feel like I was like really brave that you like just did it, even though it sounds like you didn't really make that choice for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely went with it. And I think in part that was a choice. Like I probably could have been like, no, I really want to stay at school. I don't want to withdraw. I don't want to go. But I did want something to change. So I was like, I guess this is how I have to do it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it definitely was pretty overwhelming at first, but it was mostly just because I didn't fully understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to get used to all at once, like the structure of things and, you know, the fact that there's groups all the time, like throughout the day, and what the different groups are, and the fact that there is a meal plan, and what does a meal plan mean, and what does that look like? And then also, like, depending on level of care, there's a lot of rules and things that you have to abide by, whether it's for safety or just, you know, to, you know, prevent you from acting on symptoms and things like that. So it's just like, it was a lot all at once. Especially, like I said, because there was such a quick turnaround time.
Yeah.
Between deciding to go and eventually, you know, being admitted.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a lot. So, you know, if you have the time to, like, really fully consider, like, what treatment facility you're going to and what they have to offer there, I think that can be really helpful and, like, maybe make the whole experience, like, less daunting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that you feel like by going to a treatment center, it was like detrimental to you?
Detrimental? No. Cause I think really what makes or breaks a treatment facility, there's obviously like certain things about each treatment facility that's going to be different. Like there's going to be variance among different ones in terms of how they approach things, you know, what their meal plan is like and things like that. But I really think it's up to the individual of how what they can get out of it or what they don't get out of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think people that are able to
really
like take the reins of their recovery, so to speak, they're going to benefit so much from being in treatment. While there's other people who, you know, maybe were more like me when I first entered treatment that are going to, you know, find themselves having to be in treatment again later in life, which is totally okay because everyone's journey is different. But it's really getting to that place of motivation that's going to make it the most helpful. I guess like one of the things that was not helpful for me because of the place that I was in is that I think there's a lot of competition that kind of happens in the treatment setting.
Okay.
So there was a lot of things that, you know, I didn't do initially in terms of behaviors that I picked up while in treatment. So I don't really feel like it's necessary to kind of go into detail of what those things were. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you have a lot of people that are fighting their own different battles and they're, you know, when eating disorders are challenged like that, I feel like a lot of different behaviors can come up even within the constraints that they're providing in order to make sure that, you know, you're not restricting, you're not purging, you're not exercising, whatever, whatever. So I think when you notice how everyone else is reacting to mealtimes, how they're reacting to downtime, how they're reacting in groups and things like that, like you're almost very hypervigilant of how other people are doing and if they're doing quote unquote well or quote unquote not well. So like, I guess one thing, for example, is like people's attitudes towards supplements. A lot of places, if you don't finish or complete your meal, they're going to ask you to drink a supplement instead in order to make sure that you're, you know, being adequately nourished. And a lot of people's attitudes towards supplements and how they would treat supplements would be very varied. And there's a lot of like kind of internalized comparison and talk, I guess, about, you know, that person, you know, didn't complete their meal and then they had to do a supplement. If I complete my meal and I don't do a supplement, what does that say about me? What does that say about them? Whose eating disorder is doing better here? You know what I mean? So there's still, even though we're all kind of there for the purpose to recover, at the same time, because people are at different points in their motivation levels, in their journeys, and their willingness to actively fight against the ED, that leads to a lot of different behaviors going on, so that there's a lot of comparisons depending on where you're at. And I know, like, it was frustrating for some people who are really motivated. They're like, I'm 100% done with this. I hate this. It sucks. I want to be done, and I want to recover, and I want to get the support I need, and that's why I'm here. And then, you know, they kind of felt a lot of animosity in some ways towards the other people that were there that weren't as willing to recover, or maybe their parents forced them to be in treatment or something like that. So they, you know, as a result, their eating disorder was trying to have them finagle the system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that led to either less discreet or more discreet behavior usage. And that would be more upsetting for the people that were there to, you know, to actually recover. So it's kind of hard, depending on the place mentally you're at, to kind of be dealing with that when, you know, this peer support system you always have isn't always positive. It can be toxic, which is not necessarily like a fault to treatment facilities, but it just kind of counteract that idea of accountability.
Yeah, it comes with the territory.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of like, I guess, the major downfall.
Yeah. But do you feel like overall, like, it was good for you? Like, you're glad that you did it?
I think it definitely got me where I needed to be, you know?
Good. Yeah.
A lot of times, kind of wish that it had worked better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like I said, it's, like, very dependent on, like, mentally where you're at in order to be able to get the most out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, the one thing that I will say is that, like, obviously there's a lot of privilege with going to treatment because, you know, not everyone can afford to go to treatment. Not everyone is able to push through the stigma and barriers in order to get access to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, another huge issue in treatment facilities in particular is that insurance can really push you too quickly through the treatment facility process. So insurances just have weird standards for, like, where you kind of need to be at in order to stay in certain levels of care. So sometimes, like, for whatever reason, the insurance is like, nope, you've been here too long or whatever, or we'll only provide you coverage for X amount of days before you need to go into a different level of care. So that can be really harmful to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then also just like, it's not always the safest environment for more marginalized individuals. Cause like, I don't know. I think like sometimes like it plays into the stigma of eating disorders. Like a lot of people in treatment, different people can have all different kinds of eating disorders with different behaviors. Most of the people in treatment are dealing with anorexia in some form. You know what I mean? So 90% of what's talked about is restriction.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, like, binge eating disorder is super prevalent. Purging behaviors are super prevalent. And those things are just less talked about. So I feel like it creates, like, a weird hierarchy in terms of that. And then obviously there's a hierarchy in terms of, you know, how thin you are or how malnourished you appear to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be really difficult to deal with and even like, you know, get access to treatment. And then because eating disorders are typically seen as affecting women.
Yeah.
That can be really hard when you have treatment facilities that are only for women,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, can be beneficial if like, you know, that's the peer support that you want to have. But if you're a non-binary person,
right,
you know, who is assigned female at birth,
that's really frustrating.
Can you, yeah, that would be hard to have to kind of be invalidated and unseen
mm-hmm.
while attending like a quote-unquote women's treatment facility. And, you know, like honestly, the number of men that I saw during my stay in treatment facilities was like, I could count on my hands. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Which is like, we know men are more affected than, you know, just 10 people that, you know, I could probably count from the entire time that I was there. So that's kind of like disheartening of how that process doesn't like really serve people as well as it could, you know?
Mm-hmm. Any closing thoughts on if you're guiding someone towards like a structured, guided treatment plan, what would you say? Like, what would be your top advice for someone who wants that route?
Yeah. I think, I guess like what I would say is that it's important when you're in treatment. I feel like it can feel like all you're focusing on is recovery. You know what I mean? Because you're really like, you get slightly removed from your life. Like for me, I had to withdraw from college. Contact with my friends was limited to emails and, visits
Tumblr
and things like
DMs.
that. Yep. So, and like any hobbies that I have and things like that, like I can't really participate in those things, depending on the level of care that I'm at. So it can be really difficult when you're trying to disassociate from this identity of you and your eating disorder being the same thing, the same person, and like so intertwined when you're so focused on your recovery. So I think that's a really crucial part in going into treatment is being able to, being able to explore and find yourself outside of the eating disorder and the recovery process. Know that you're committing to that, but at the same time, part of recovery isn't just recovering by getting rid of symptoms and eating food. It's about figuring out who you are authentically, being able to live authentically and not have to, kind of limit yourself and your being and how much space you take up and things like that, in order to feel seen, heard, and validated, So if we're moving over to you.
Yeah, so basically, what happened was I was like just so miserable, of being like a mess, because it really was a mess, like going like cycling through binging and restricting so much. It really, like, my body was always injured. I was always tired. I didn't feel confident at all about anything, and I was just kind of like, well, this is my only option now. Like, I cannot do this anymore. Sick of being sick, right? So, I guess like the way that I kind of did it, and I'm not, I mean, obviously everyone will do it differently. And like another part of it was like my sister was concurrently recovering from a restrictive eating disorder, but I didn't want to scare my parents because they had already gone through so much. It was so stressful for them. So I was kind of like loans, what's it called? The lone horse cowboy, kind of like going into the Wild West here. But I actually started, so that's kind of how I started listening to podcasts, is by like listening to like some recovery podcasts. Some of my favorites are Food Psych, RIP Diets, and this one that's not really about like diet culture or anything, but it's just really positive. It's called Why Won't You Date Me? And it's like hilarious. I also like read some motivational books, called like one like the Intuitive Eating Book. It's like the official one. And I had to learn a lot by watching other people. So basically, in my house, I grew up with everybody eating very kind of diet culture-y, disordered eating. Like, I didn't have any examples of what it was like to eat normally. So I had like a roommate who ate really normally, even for a dancer. Like, she ate really well. Like, she was really intuitive. My boyfriend is really intuitive. And just like making friends who weren't dancers or who weren't ballet dancers really helped me to kind of see what eating is supposed to look like and to watch other people. Like lapsing into behavior and then catching. Which is like, it was like hard, but after enjoying more freedom with myself, it was harder and harder every time to go back to those behaviors. Even when I wanted to, it was easier for me to realize, like, hey, that's really dangerous. Like, don't do that.
So how did you
Lots.
kind of like get yourself through those moments? So like if you had like a particularly hard meal or something like that, how did you keep yourself on track to prevent either from using symptoms or to kind of like quiet that voice that's like, making you feel really guilty and shameful and things like that?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like sometimes time, which is
Yeah.
like brain
Well,
brain shattering realization.
yeah. Well, it's like funny that you bring it up too, because I feel like if reduces that level of long or whatever. I think it kind of helps thoughts. But yeah, social media is definitely a tricky one. I feel like there's many ways that it can be a positive experience, many ways that it can be kind of toxic, in the same way that, like, you know, being in treatment around a bunch of peers that are at various places in their recovery can be kind of toxic. So I think it's just like something to kind of keep in mind, and it's important to check in with yourself and where you're at in order to know what's right for you. Yeah.
I think also following like nutritionists and health at every size people and like more generally educated content creators who aren't just like, hey, I'm Anna and I'm doing great, thanks for asking, here's my account. Like someone who like has the science to back up the facts of like why you're doing this, because it really is validating when you're doing something and you see, oh, this scientist agrees that I am also healthy now. Thank you, science, right? I don't know. For me, it's more helpful like to have a certified person telling me I'm doing
good job. And I mean, so I guess kind of starting to get into some other options that you kind of have when you're deciding to recover, being able to surround yourself with professionals, personally for me, I feel like that's really important. So finding a therapist that specializes in eating disorders, having a primary care physician that also specializes in eating disorders is helpful. Not necessarily accessible to everyone.
I didn't even know that they had those.
Yeah, it's very, if you can get a primary care physician that is at least mindful of those things, I think that can be really life-changing for some people that would have otherwise been stigmatized while they're at the doctor's office and things like that. So that can
I had to ask the doctor the other day when I was proud of myself. When I went to the doctor, and they're like, okay, can you like go so we can weigh you? I was like, don't tell me the number, please. I was like, do not tell me.
Yes,
because usually, or like I'll just look at the ceiling while they're doing it, and they kind of get the idea.
Yeah,
you know. But I was like really firm about it. They're like, yep, no problem. Just turn around. And I was like, oh yeah, baby.
Yes,
I was so proud of myself. I was like, I am not gonna be triggered today, ma'am.
Literally finding out that you don't have to be weighed when you go to the doctors was the most, like, my brain exploded. I was like, are you kidding? And like, it's hard to like actually stand up for yourself and like be firm with that and be like, can I do back to scale, please? Actually, I don't want to get weighed. Or can you not tell me the number or things like that? Like that's super empowering to be able to do that. So I'm really proud that you're able to do that. That's great.
Virtual fist bump.
But yeah. And then also, a nutritionist that specializes in eating disorders is really important, because I feel like nutritionists come in all shapes and forms. So it's really helpful to get one that specializes in eating disorders. And particularly if you can find one that specializes in the eating disorder that you're struggling with or the symptoms you're struggling with, that can be really helpful too. Other things, support groups can be helpful. I've attended support groups at my college.
I did too. It was art therapy. We just drew pictures.
I love art therapy.
I didn't really understand what we were doing there, but I was like, oh, it's cool. Go hang out. There's some fun people there. We're just drawing pictures. It was fun.
That's great. That's so funny. Support groups can be helpful. Yeah, so college. College support groups. Wow, could you tell that I lost my train of thought right there? Where else? I've done support groups in my nutritionist's office.
Church support groups.
Okay, that could definitely be one.
I didn't do it, but Gabrielle did.
Okay, cool. So I feel like there's a lot. There's either some that you can either do through different communities and associations that you're affiliated with, or, you know, through your therapist, nutritionist, whatever. So those can be helpful if you kind of like, especially if you're doing like trying to do things either independently or at an outpatient level, it might be something that can give you like a little bit extra support, because you could do like a meal support group and you know, have dinner with people and then you can process it. So that can be helpful. Or you can have support groups that are more just talking and they can, you know, provide peer support, or you can get, you know, support from, you know, the therapist or nutritionist or whoever who's leading the group. Then there's also recovery coaches, which has been something that's like kind of new to me, but
interesting. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, someone that I know recently, within the past year, was connected with a recovery coach through Instagram.
Okay.
And so she had a very, very positive experience with that. It was a lot of peer support. Obviously, like when you have a recovery coach, it's more than likely someone who has gone through an eating disorder or has recovered. And so it can be helpful. I think it's really helpful when you see people that are quote unquote on the other side of things. You know what I mean? I feel like when you first start recovery, it can be really daunting and feel like getting out of like a quasi recovery state or being able to achieve full recovery is like not possible. So I think it's really helpful when you have someone that can model what it's like to be fully recovered from an eating disorder. So that could be always something that you can do. And I'm sure that that's another way that you can kind of use social media in a more positive way for yourself and kind of shape how you do that, I guess. And then the other thing that I thought of when we were like, you know, kind of thinking about this topic, and I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Gianna, but have you ever heard of Mini Mod?
No, but like reading the description, I think I understand it. No, I don't.
Yeah. Well, so basically, I heard about Mini Mod when I was like in treatment. And it seems like one way that, you know, if you're deciding to recover on your own, especially if you aren't using a nutritionist to kind of either help give you a meal plan or a way to be accountable to, you know, eating enough or whatever, it's kind of a program, I guess, I don't know a better word for it, that gives you a certain minimum calorie amount that you need to hit every day in order to ensure that you're adequately refeeding yourself until you like kind of reach your set point. So there's this one person who makes YouTube videos. Her name's Ladle by Ladle. And I kind of like heard about it more or less through her. And I have her like blog pulled up. And she says...
Okay, yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, Mini Mod is an eating disorder recovery method developed by Gwyneth Olwin. I can read. Yeah, Olwin. Okay. And I guess now it's called the homeodynamic recovery method. And she says, Mini Mod guidelines are guidelines for recovery from restrictive eating disorders, which kind of makes sense, I guess, because of the calorie limit. But I think one thing that I've kind of learned is that recovery from restrictive eating disorders more or less looks the same as recovery from binge eating disorder. So honestly, I feel like they could all kind of benefit. But so the guidelines food amounts are what energy balanced non-eating disorder people normally eat to maintain their health and weight, meaning your minimum intake guidelines are what you can expect to eat during and after recovery. But you can also expect to eat far more than the minimum intake during the energy restoration part of recovery, aka extreme hunger.
I kind of don't like how this sounds.
So what's interesting, because when I heard about it, I was kind of like, it's kind of scary in a way because, you know, they tell you that you need to eat a certain number of calories. Mm-hmm. And when you're still struggling, I feel like that can be really daunting to kind of make that commitment, because it does really kind of push you in the same way that having a meal plan pushes you.
I don't like though that there's a minimum amount of calories, because I feel like that will be like, oh, so I could just eat the minimum.
Well,
so people might not want to eat more.
So the idea, and I mean, I don't really want to kind of dive into any numbers, anything like that. So if it's something that's interesting, you can definitely look it up. The minimum intake, I will say, is an adequate amount and reminds me actually a lot of, there's a doctor, Dr. Nicola Rinaldi, and she has recommendations for people with hypothalamic amenorrhea. Basically, if you miss your period, right?
Okay, yeah.
So consecutively missing your period is amenorrhea. And that's a symptom, obviously, that a lot of people with restrictive eating disorders end up having, although you don't have to have. And there's also a lot of like associated physiological things that kind of coincide with that. And so her method of recovering and being able to gain your period back is similar to this method in terms of there is a minimum amount that she believes is, you know, appropriate based off of her work and her research to be eating. And if I'm not wrong, the calorie amount is the same in terms of the minimum. And then also it's like definitely encouraged that you eat over the minimum in order to honor your extreme hunger, right? So I think kind of like not one of the drawbacks, but I think what's important to think about kind of like what you're saying is that where are you in your motivation levels to recover, right? Because if you are all for like, you know, I'm going to commit to this and I'm going to fully recover, I think it's going to be less difficult for you to kind of stick with honoring your hunger and eating over that minimum amount when your body calls for it, right? But like if you're kind of in this quasi-recovery state where there's still a lot of restrictions and fear of eating too much and things like that, I think this could be like a really difficult process for someone in that stage of their recovery.
No, I just pulled it up.
And I think
too, I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's the reason kind of that I put this on here is because I do feel like there's pros and cons. Obviously for the YouTuber that I'm talking about, Ladle by Ladle, it worked for her. It was something that was positive for her, and she considers, you know, her eating disorder in full remission, which is great. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason for, you know, like, there to be any judgment in someone how someone's recovery journey is.
No, of course.
It's filled with many ups and downs in different ways. So if this is something that works for you or could work for you, that's why I want to bring it up. But at the same time, like, some concerns for me is that at first you might have to track calories in order to make sure that you're reaching the minimums. And if that's a symptom that you previously struggled with, it might be harder to kind of let go of that symptom if you're relying on that to make sure that you're eating enough now. Or, you know, if I would recommend for someone that is deciding to do this, that they should probably consult with their doctor beforehand, because you want to make sure that you're not accidentally endangering yourself in terms of the refeeding syndrome and making sure all your electrolytes are balanced. And that if you do have any physical symptoms that come up, that you can be able to go talk to a doctor about that in order to make sure medically you're okay. But, you know, overall, like I said, this has worked for other people. There's similar processes that I know that have worked. There's one person I like follow on Instagram who was kind of like having the symptoms related to amenorrhea, like extreme hunger, being cold all the time, things like that. And so she decided to go what she called all in, which was more or less kind of following this method without necessarily, you know, having this name, you know what I mean? And I think it really does help you to give yourself permission to fully, you know, face all those fear foods and other things that, you know, you weren't necessarily able to do when you're in your eating disorder. But at the same time, like, I personally feel that eating is kind of only one part of the process.
Yeah, there's like a whole emotional other side. And like, I feel like doing things on my own, I haven't really figured it out. So my e-therapist unfortunately did not work out. I did tell her that I did not want to talk anymore. And then I never looked
at
her response, so I feel really guilty about it. But I was like, I'm going to explore other options. Thanks, bye. Am I exploring other options? No. But I will. I just have to get on that.
One step at a time. I totally hear you. That process is difficult. So, but I'm glad that you are at least able to take that
to quit my e-therapist.
Yeah, I mean, if someone's not helpful to you, then
anyway.
But I mean, personally, like, I feel like a therapist is so important, yeah, because there's a lot of things that contribute to, you know, your mental and emotional state, both before starting recovery and during recovery. So I think being able to kind of work on some of those things, explore yourself, explore your past,
yeah,
et cetera, can be really helpful during the process.
Yeah, definitely. But like, I feel like we talked about a lot of different things. And if we missed one, please feel free to let us know in a DM or an email.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, I feel like, I guess, let's see, final points, an overall summation. What can we take away from this episode? Number one, however you decide to recover is totally valid. And I encourage number two, everyone to kind of push themselves out of the comfortability of being in quasi recovery.
Yeah.
And number three, advocate for what you need. So if you feel like you need the support through formalized treatment, do that. Say that, yeah, you want that.
Bully your insurance.
Bully your insurance. Yeah. Fuck insurance companies. Just kidding. But yeah, be able to advocate for yourself. Find yourself a good support system. I think that's key no matter how you kind of want to go through the process. And, you know, try to get yourself a team, whether that's, like I said, through treatment or in an outpatient setting, in order to give yourself that support. So that...
Consume a lot of media that looks like you and looks like your goals.
Yeah.
Don't allow yourself to be sucked back in to other people's expectations.
Yeah.
Really set expectations for yourself of, like, what do you want out of your recovery? What do you want your life to look like? Because your life will be so much better on the other side. I pinky promise.
Pinky promise. Kiss it to seal the promise. Yeah, for sure. I feel like that's a good note to end on. So thank you all for listening.
Have a wonderful day.
Get yourself a snack if you need it.
Yum. Bye.
Bye.